Members of the St. Petersburg Downtown Neighborhood Association heard a sobering presentation this week on the effects of a Category 5 hurricane on the Tampa Bay region. Let's listen to the presentation. First, here is St. Pete Downtown Neighborhood Association President Karen Carmichael to introduce the guests.
And I would like to introduce Amber Boulding from the Office of Emergency Management, Sergeant Jason Deary, who is our CSO for District 2, Lieutenant Jason Dowda from the Fire Department, and of course our Downtown Deployment Officer, Sergeant Tom Quayle. So, Amber, you want to go first?
Sure. Tonight we're going to give you a taste of what it's like if a Category 5 hurricane were to impact the Tampa Bay area directly. So this is called Project Phoenix. Initially, this was launched in 2012. And just last year, they kind of revamped it with the new science that's out, new numbers are out. So we have a new video out. So it's really good to give you an idea of what to expect. Because when was the last time we were directly impacted by a Category 5 hurricane? Does anyone know? Quiz, right. 1921 was the closest, but really, we've never seen anything like that before. So if you think of Hurricane Michael a few years ago with the panhandle, that's kind of what this video is going to show. So it's really cool. There's local newscasters on here. They use the CG to, you know, some local spots that you'll recognize that shows the storm surge. It's funny, when I show the video, I always get the hand raised, like, when did this happen? I don't remember. It hasn't happened, but it's meant to show you what to expect if and when something like this does happen.
The damage this morning is unimaginable. The beaches are essentially gone.
The Howard Franklin Bridge is completely destroyed. I've never seen anything like this.
Officials are scrambling to clean up debris from local airports in order for supplies to be flown in. We are getting reports from Homosassa of residents trapped by downed trees.
There's not a single business that we've driven by that doesn't have significant damage.
Tampa General Hospital has told us that they are unable to receive any patients after the hospital suffered significant damage from wind and storm surge. The level of destruction out here is indescribable. It's going to be a very long road to recovery for the Tampa Bay area.
I will say, though, this is the standard that we prepare for, not just at a city level, city, county, state, federal level with FEMA. Mm-hmm. So you plan for the worst case scenario and you get everything in line and, you know, they cross their fingers and hope for the best. But the recovery plan and the preparedness plan and the response plan, all of those things only work if everybody does their part, right? And so that's why we like to come out here and we talk to residents, because you do have a significant part in this and in preparedness. Because the better prepared that you as a resident are, the better or the more resilient we are as a community and as a city, and we're able to recover and bounce back faster. To my colleagues that are here, please interject if you can, or else I'll completely take over because I could talk hurricanes all day long.
My name is Jason Deary. Again, I'm with the police department. And, you know, although that's pretty, you saw the room was really quiet, right? That's pretty stunning. I worked for the agency. We went down to Hurricane, was it Charlie that we talked about earlier? Mm-hmm. That was a couple of years ago, quite a few. And I will tell you that the damage you saw there was consistent with what I saw down in Charlotte County. So police and fire obviously going to be there for you as best they can, but we're going to prioritize. And you know, basically what that means is it's life and death first, and then it's, okay, who's trapped? Can you handle yourself for another day or two, or is it 2 hours? You know, things like that. So the fire department is going to prioritize. We're going to prioritize. The hospital is going to prioritize. Now, the good thing about our nation is no matter where there's a major incident, people will travel from all over the country to help, and they usually get there pretty quick. But pretty quick can be, you know, 5 days, 4 days, depending on if there's access. If one of the main bridges goes out or the skyway is damaged, may have trouble getting people up from the south, so they're going to have to go around. So our resources although they will be en route and allocated, it may be imminent. So that's pretty major. Some of the smaller things that we can do as individuals and collectively, I'm gonna put these on, it's all right, is the things you need to understand is that the power is gonna be out. All right, the power is gonna be out for, it could be up to 2 weeks, it could be 7 days, but whatever it is, it's something that we need to prepare for. So it's an uncomfortable topic, but it's something you guys have to be ready for. If you have pets, do you have enough pet food? If you guys need a certain, if we all need a certain medication, do you have enough for that? If you can get by on, you know, if there's dry goods, maybe there's no electricity, you're not gonna be able to refrigerate things for food. So it may be 4 or 5 days or 6 days or 10 days without electricity. Consider, what are you gonna eat? What can you mix with water, right, to where you'll be okay with that for several days until the Red Cross comes in and sets up. But if the entire county, or even, let's say, if it's Pinellas or Manatee that gets hit with some up in Pasco, it's gonna be tough to get you those box lunches right away, right? So you have to prepare. So there's things that we can do, though, after the storm. It's common for all of us, we wanna see, you know, what's the damage? What happened out there? I'm curious, right? We're curious. So essentially, be careful with going out exploring, okay? Be careful. Sometimes people will go out and they'll drive, right? They wanna drive around and they wanna see what's going on. They wanna check on their neighbors, their friends, their business. They're curious. It's a natural thing to be curious, all right? Try and stay put. Stay put for a couple of days if you can. Don't go out exploring. Why? Well, the power's out. We're conditioned. Let's just talk about human nature, right? To stop at red lights. But you will see at four-way stops or intersections where there's traffic going north, south, east, west, if there's no power, what do we see? Cars zooming through. There's no power, but there's no red lights telling people to stop. So it doesn't register. Doesn't mean you're stupid. It's happened to me before. I just blew an intersection, the power's up. We're conditioned to stop on red, but if we don't see red, we go through it sometimes. That happens. If there's no power, you're gonna have a bunch of intersections throughout the city where people, it's not gonna register, and they're gonna go through, there's gonna be traffic crashes. There's gonna be standing water, depending on how soon you go out or the location where you're at, right? Allendale, maybe not. Here, yes. If you're driving, standing water, you might think it's 8 inches. It could be 4 feet, and next thing you know, you're submerged. Power lines. There's going to be power lines down all over the place. Okay, well, you say, well, you said the power wasn't. The power is going to be out, but I don't know which ones are going to be live, which ones aren't going to be live. Just because there's no power to your home or your building or your condo doesn't mean there's not power to that line that's down. And if it's in the water, that could be problematic, right? So that's why we don't want to go out exploring. So we have preparation for not only yourself, medications, mental preparation. If you're alive, be strong. Be strong for yourself, your families, right, and your pets. So make sure you have food that you can mix and prepare for, I would say, even a week, okay, that doesn't need refrigeration. Make sure you have pet food. Make sure you have medications. Don't go out exploring. Don't go out driving. Just stay put for a little bit, okay? There may not be any cell service, right? That's important. Cell phones are sometimes, it's our lifeline to our friends and family to let them know we're okay. Tell them, if there's a storm coming, it's okay to call your relatives and friends and say, listen, the officer said there may not be any power, there may not be any cell service. If I don't call you for a few days, don't expect the worst. Just expect that I'm doing the best I can to take care of myself, and I'll call you when I can. It's okay to let, especially your out-of-state relatives and people that care about you, because they're gonna be freaking out. So call them and say, listen, I may not have cell service, but if I don't call you, don't panic right away, all right? Put those people at ease as well. It's also a tough topic to talk about, but occasionally there'll be people that take advantage after a storm. When you get cell service or phone service, if there are solicitors, we're raising money for this or for that or for this, just tell them, use your best judgment. I'm not gonna tell you not to follow your heart, but let that breathe for a minute. Okay, people will take advantage of situations like that, so don't be so quick to give to a particular foundation that calls you or that sends you an email. If you want to give, go down to the local Red Cross or SPCA, and you can take care of people or animals, okay? If you see something, say something. The police and fire are going to be out. We're going to be on 12-hour shifts, 12 on, 12 off, 12 on, 12 off. And a fire, I think they work longer. So they're going to have all of us at the police station. If it takes a week or 2 weeks, they tell us, this storm's coming. Tell your family, all of our best, but we need you at the police station. And that's where we're going to be. And I don't want to speak for the fire, but they have the same obligations. They're going to leave their family and go out to protect you. I'm looking at the hurricane guy there. So that's important. And so we're going to be on 12-hour shifts, daytime, nighttime, and they're going to prioritize. And, you know, that's how that's going to happen. So you just have to expect it. If you see something, say something. I'll go back to that. If you see someone looking around or you see a car driving around that you don't recognize or they're kind of snooping, it's okay to call us. We expect that. We're going to be out, like I said, half the agency is going to be out from 6 p.m. to 6 a.m. The other half is going to be out from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. We sleep at the station. So we'll be out there. But if you see something, don't feel, oh, I shouldn't call. It's not an emergency. If someone's looking in someone's car or you see someone in your neighbor's condo that doesn't live there and is obviously suspicious, it's okay to call us. You know, and we experience all kinds of unique things throughout storms. People will take generators, if they need it, and sometimes people don't need it per se. But so we're going to be busy, but not too busy for you. Does that make sense? You know, understand we're going to prioritize, but also we're there for you as best we can be.
I have a question about before the storm actually.
Sure.
Yes. There's a main evacuation route.
Yep.
What will the city doing?
Yeah, so that's a great question. The question is, listen, there's a main evacuation route. What's the city, what are the cops going to be doing? What are the city personnel going to be doing? So essentially, I would definitely pay attention. Go to the city website, go to the fire website, right? The fire links, go to the police link and talk amongst yourselves. Say, listen, they're telling us we should probably leave now. Prepare your, you know, take your pass, your medication. If they say to leave, you know, as far as financial resources, it can be tough sometimes. Don't feel bad about booking a hotel in Orlando and driving several hours or even farther north. I don't care what it is. If it's a Motel 6 in Okaloosa, wherever it is, book it, drive up there and stay there for 2 or 3 days and then come back.
Jason.
Heed the warning. When they tell you, when the newscasters, they tell you, listen, this is a storm where you want to go, you want to get out, don't wait. If they're telling you to evacuate, You need to leave and do what they say. But in regards to what we're going to be doing, we were going to be facilitating the highway patrol, different agencies, but facilitating an egress. The best, quickest way, whether it's US 19, Courtney Campbell, farther north, all the way to 19, or perhaps the Howard Franklin, right? I don't think it's going to be south of the Skyway if it's coming that way. But so they're gonna ask you, listen, we're going to help facilitate. We may close down inbound to St. Peter Pinellas County. So you may have directions out, right? What do you want to do a couple of days before you think you're going to leave? You want to fill your car with gas. Things like that. And be prepared to be on the road all day and even all night.
Could add.
Go ahead.
Well, if we could just take a big step back first, we're going to let's talk about the preparedness mm-hmm. and pre-storm evacuation. So it starts with every one of your households, and you have to look at your individual risk. Because, you know, my risk is different from your risk is different from your risk is different from your risk, depending on who lives in your house. Do you have kids in your house? Do you have pets in your house? Do you have folks with special needs on oxygen, electrically dependent? Are you able to climb stairs? So depending on what floor you live on, can you climb up and down those stairs without assistance if you needed to? All of those things will go into, you know, take into account what your individual risk is. Another huge component is what's your evacuation zone. So, are you able to stay, or do you have to go? A lot of downtown, you know, there's an island that will be in St. Pete that is in a non-evacuation zone that's high and dry. So you may not be ordered to evacuate if you live in that certain area, but look at your risks. Should you stay? Because if you are on oxygen or even like a CPAP machine, you know, and electrically dependent, you lose power for 7 days. You probably shouldn't. Right? So think through that. Are you going to stay or are you going to go? And if the answer is really either, then what? If you're going to stay, then I need 7 days of food. 7 days of water. My pet needs food. And then start going through the what ifs. Okay, so what if the elevators are down and I need to climb my stairs? What am I going to need? If your answer is, I'm going to go, where are you going to go? We have shelters in the county, and I put up here, this is Pinellas County's website. It's storm.pinellascounty.org. You can also do stpeteprepares.com. All of that is found in your guide. Everybody, every table has guides. This is Pinellas County specific with evacuation information, shelter information, all of that good stuff. What you should do if you stay, what you should do if you go, and how to plan accordingly for those. Managing expectations is a very big deal, though. So you saw what can happen here after a storm, and sometimes our expectation is, well, I'm going to stay, and if something bad happens, I'll call 911. And the reality is 911 isn't coming if it's in the storm. Okay. So if you're in a surge zone, a flood zone, and you choose to stay, and then the surge comes in, and you're in whether it's your house or your bottom floor, apartment or condo, we can't come out to save you because we can't send trucks out there. If it's immediately after the storm, we have to push roads of debris because there's trees down and lines down. So all of these things you need to take into consideration for post-storm. Is it going to be safe for me to stay here? And if you do go, where are you going to go? There are shelters in the county. There's shelters all over the place, which are a safe haven for you. Manage your expectations because shelters are not a fun place to be. There is a lot of people crammed in a tight space, probably not shower facilities, so it's going to get kind of funky. You're going to be fighting each other for electrical cords to plug in your cell phones. You'll get some, paper bag meals. It might not be that great. So it just depends. But it's there for you. You'll survive the storm. But if you are available, or if you can, a hotel. If you have family or friends that are on high ground in a hardened house, go there. As Sergeant said, you could go to out of the path of the storm. So did anybody were here in 2004 and evacuate Charlie? Nobody? All right. Did you go to Orlando?
I think I went to North Carolina.
Okay. A lot of people went to Orlando.
Did you have a room reserved in Orlando? You had a camera.
Okay. How many people were here for Hurricane Irma? All right. How many people stayed? All right. How many people left? How'd it go?
I went for work.
Yeah, okay. So I've heard nightmare stories of evacuations for Irma. The best I can say is learn from those times, right? Lessons learned, apply them. What went right, what went wrong, what could go better? But what's really important is when there's an evacuation order, it looks like this outside. It is beautiful and sunny. Because if we wait for it to deteriorate to order evacuation, nobody's getting out. All right? So the county's rolling the dice based on what they're hearing from the National Hurricane Center, right? It's a forecast. It's a prediction. It's the best we have in the crystal ball. Sometimes it's right, and if we're lucky, it's wrong, and it doesn't come here, right? But it's a forecast. So based on that forecast, if there's a 30% chance that we're going to get those Cat 5 conditions, they're ordering evacuations on that Cat 5, and it's probably about 3 days out. It takes about, I think it's 50 hours clearance for a full evacuation of Pinellas County. Mm-hmm. So that's a hard pill to swallow. So you're gonna have to leave before you even know for sure if the storm's coming. So be prepared for that. That's to keep you safe, and it's gonna keep those evacuation routes able to take them. FDOT has evacuation plans, so they'll turn all southbound streets to north to get you out of here, that sort of thing. So keep an eye on the news. If you do Facebook, Twitter, do Florida 511. It's going to help you with those evacuation routes to get out of the city if you can. But we say evacuate tens of miles, not hundreds of miles, if you can and you're able. So get that newer hotel that might be more hardened. That's my family's plan. In Irma, I took my kids and my husband and my dogs out and made them go to Jacksonville because I didn't want them here for the storm. And Jacksonville ended up getting it worse. They couldn't get back. And we were okay here, and if I would have stuck with my original plan, it would have been fine. So plan ahead, make your decisions now, and trust your instincts, and you can never have too much common sense when it comes to storms, too. Trust your instincts, be smart.
Yeah, I can tell you from personal experience, so we do a lot of preparation. The good thing is with Irma, we had a really good dry run. We assumed the worst, and we thought it was going to be the worst, so we did, from the fire department standpoint, we did an all call. So all 340 or 350 personnel
they gave them a window of 3 days to go to your homes, prepare what you need to with your family, get your situation correct and right, and then report back to the station, and you're not allowed to leave until we basically tell you that you can go home. So for us, we were in the station for about 3.5 to 4 days for us, give or take. The good thing about these predictions, they tell you, those predictions are, I think, every 4 hours when they do the news, every 4 hours. So on the 12th, at the 12 o'clock one, they said, oh, it's nothing. And then at the next one, they said, oh, now it's category 3. Think about it this way. You're now 4 hours behind the other person who took the incentive to leave before you did. So from my family's perspective, when we had Hurricane Irma, I live on the other side of the bridge, we waited to the last minute. I went home, prepared my house, showed back up to the station. They thought they were gonna wait it out. One of the predictions that came in said it was gonna be really bad. I thought, okay, I would leave. Couldn't buy a plane ticket, couldn't buy a bus ticket. The only thing she can get was a train ticket, and it wasn't until hours later. And I was with a 3-year-old and a newborn, and she was by herself. So she wound up taking the train up to Florida, and it just kept going all the way to DC, and that's where she ended up. So unfortunately, she was stuck there, and she had to rent a car, and it took her 4 days to rent a car to come back. So again, for us also with the fire department, with that dry run that we did, we are with your local master fire station here on 8th Street and 4th Avenue South. When we did an all-call, that also includes not just us, but we had police officers there, sanitation was there, parks and recreation was there. So as soon as the storm got to the point where we could no longer respond, we had to stay put in our station. The minute it opened up, we had to go and respond to all the calls that we got in that gap in between where we were not going to respond at all. So to reiterate to you what he was saying earlier, what is an emergency to you? If your power went out, should you really call 911 unless you are needed for oxygen or something like that? Not necessarily. But if you do call 911, just know that you're going to be backlogged on everyone else, and they're going to prioritize on what you were going to go through. So when we did ours and our gap was over and we finally were allowed to go outside, Parks and Recreation went first with all their big loaders with the intent that if there was any trees, they're going to move trees first, and we followed behind them. And we had a stack, I'm not playing, probably about this thick of papers of all the calls we got throughout that eight hour window. We have to go through all those calls, but as you can tell, if someone says my power was out at 10 p.m. and I show up to your house the next day, 14 hours later, I'm gonna tell you your power's gonna stay out because nothing's gonna happen until you get it or someone's gonna respond and do anything. So there is a lot to take in. Yes, ma'am.
So I saw this presentation at City Hall about a month and a half ago. And the thing that struck me was, is it true that the fire department will not come once the winds are 50 miles an hour if you haven't evacuated?
When it's over a certain mile per hour, we are not allowed to respond.
It's not necessarily will not, it's cannot. And it's not safe for the apparatus to come out for them. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's, again, one of those where you determine what you think is serious 911. Did you fall and break your leg? That is serious. But are you in cardiac arrest? Or you have someone in cardiac arrest? If someone else that's under the medication that's diabetic and now they can no longer breathe, that's more of a priority than a broken leg at some point, depending on where the break is at, of course. But just think about that throughout the times. We are all gonna be here, like I said, all call, 350 personnel, is fire department, same PPE would be there, everyone else would be there. And what he was saying before, if this happened with us, and it was a significant disaster in Tampa Bay area, we actually responded to Orlando for, I believe it was Michael, I'm not sure which one it was, but we responded to Orlando to stage there. And there was crews that came from Missouri and Tennessee. And these crews that these people live and die by, this is what they do. They respond and they deploy and this is their bread and butter. They will come to us if that happened. But if we have no bridges to get here, no roads to get here, it's gonna be a very long time before these people get here. So preparation is the biggest key in this whole presentation. Not to think about what to do during or after, it's what to do before.
You have to know what you're gonna do and when you're gonna do it. So another key example, Hurricane Michael was Cat 5, right? Do you know what Hurricane Michael was 24 hours before it made landfall? Right, it was a tropical storm. Okay, so we get so caught up on the cones, right? We have the 3-day cone, we have the 5-day cone. The silver lining of a hurricane is we know when to expect it, right? We're scared of tornadoes because they can pop up, and hit. But we know when a hurricane hits. We have that 5 days. Lately, we don't anymore. All right, when we get to certain parts of the hurricane season and the Gulf waters are super, super warm and hot, we have that rapid intensification, and it's been happening a lot more often. So when the conditions are right and there's a tropical storm out there, you may be in that 3-day cone. but depending on what happens, it spins up, and it spins up fast. So the folks in the panhandle didn't have, you know, those 3 days they were counting on. So you have to be ready for things like that. It hasn't happened lately. It doesn't mean it's not going to happen, because it hadn't happened to Mexico Beach either until it did. So don't count on that 3-day window to decide and get your, you know, ducks in a row. They have to be in a row now.
I live downtown St. Pete, and before the hurricane, at the time of the hurricane, we had special life-saving equipment across the street at the Indigo, which is now the Exchange Hotel.
Mm-hmm.
Will there continue to be a drop for the equipment and special people that can help?
That right now I'm not 100% sure, because I know whenever something plans at that event, we plan where it's going to be. That can change. There will be something that will be a bulletin out if we were to tell, or if we tell the local buildings that this is where it would be. But it would be only a certain amount of medical equipment, something that's just for a user, for someone that's not necessarily going to be a paramedic or an EMT, but just a basic, maybe an AED or something of that, or something for trauma or that kind of stuff. But it won't be anything significant where you might necessarily get drugs or anything like that. No, just last thing from me, from the fire department standpoint, just know that if this event does happen, like I said, it's an all call for us. We will be here, and we will not be going home until we are done with you guys. So know that you guys are a priority for us. We took that pledge when we signed up for this job, and that's what we're going to do. So if the event does happen, we'll be around the clock. Just like them, we'll start with 24-hour shifts, and we'll probably break into 12-hour shifts just to help maintain personnel. We have 13 stations throughout the city, 350 personnel. We can do all we can do, as much as we can. And of course, hopefully, if it just affects us, we get someone to come and help us, that kind of stuff. But if it's the whole entire county, it will be a while before we can help with small things.
And to speak on that piece as well, citywide, we have a city disaster operations plan, and every single city department has a role in storm preparation, response, and recovery. And all of those staff have been identified as emergency critical. And when we get to that point, when a storm is imminent, it's all hands on deck. Everybody comes in, everybody has a place to sleep. You know, they take care of their families first, and, you know, so they have to plan ahead as well. But then they come to work, and we're here to work for the city. And we don't go home until it's time for recovery. I saw your hand first.
I live in a condo downtown. I feel pretty safe here. My car is on the third level, my apartment's on the eighth level. It's really new, so it's got great windows. I'm going to turn the power off, open the elevators.
You may have water, but it might not necessarily be clean water. Depending on if the systems went down, you might not have clean water.
And I think that's part of your assessment. So if you've assessed it and if you can stay there for, let's say, 7 days with no assistance coming, then that's best for you. So, you know, it's if your evacuations are solely based on storm surge. So if you are not in a surge zone, it doesn't have to be a non-evac. Your condo could be in a level C, and if we're under a B evac, you don't have to go. But that doesn't mean you shouldn't go. Maybe you should stay, maybe you should go, but every person needs to analyze that for themselves. But just know that if you land in that evacuation zone that's ordered, you need to know where you're going to go.
Could you explain that, the evacuation
surge
and not the...
Yes, so it's in your guide. It'll show you what level of storm surge each evacuation zone falls in. I believe an A is like 6 to 10 feet, a B is, you know, 11 to 15, and so it goes up to 35 feet of storm surge as a level D. So any non-evac is above 35 feet above sea level. The county, I'm not saying they won't, the county is the entity that orders mandatory evacuations. They have the statutory authority to do that. So they may take in some wind considerations, but generally, evacuations are based on storm surge. So if you live in a mobile home, it's always a mandatory evac, regardless if it's high ground or not, because it's more of a vulnerable structure. But it's always a good idea to take into account what the, you know, how your building is built. And when you saw the footage on Hurricane Phoenix, that was from Michael, that was on all storm surge areas, you know, when it wipes it off the foundation like that.
Yes, ma'am.
This is more of a, thank you for all of the resources. You know, it's hard not to think about, like, what are the chances that this is going to happen?
Yes.
Quite frankly, you know, we don't need a Category 5 to to have all of this occur. But just in general, are we seeing like more activity, like hurricane activity this year versus other years? Or, I mean, it's hard to predict in general.
But and I wish I had the stats with me. So prior to this year, and I'm not saying it's a slow season. Prior to this year, the previous, I think it was 7 years, we had had a storm prior to June 1, which is the beginning of hurricane season. 2020 was the most active on record. We went through the entire alphabet and then started into the Greek alphabet. And if you don't know, if there's a deadly storm or it's really costly, they retire that hurricane name to never be used again. So for the first time in history, we're in the Greek alphabet, and we have to retire a letter of the Greek alphabet. So what do you replace it with? You can't. So we can't use the Greek alphabet anymore. So now they have an alternate list. So during a hurricane season, if we max out all the names, I believe there's 22 names in a season, now they have an alternate name list. And all those names rotate every 6 years. So it's kind of funny. It was so busy in 2020. But in the last 7-8 years, yes, we've seen more storms, stronger storms, and more rapidly intensifying storms than we traditionally have. I think I missed a question over here.
Yeah, I'm just curious about this projection of loss of power and possibly very great extent of that. Is there an alternative way of communication? Do police or others go around with bullhorns and notify people? How do we access if there are evacuation routes set up or not? I mean, are we still assuming that electricity in some form is going to be able to support this?
So evacuations would be pre-storm, so we don't anticipate issues for evacuations. It's going to be your post-storm. And we had a lot of lessons learned from this after Irma was people had a loss of power, which means what dies? Your cell phone, right? And that's how we all communicate. So without cell phone power, we couldn't get messages out to people. So we had rec centers that we wanted to open up, and there's air conditioner, we had bottled water, but how are we getting the message out? So we ended up sending our neighborhood teams out, you know, door to door to pass out flyers and let people know where they could go. So since then, we've come a little, you know, we've developed that system and that plan to try to get the word out. But I know the fire apparatus has the PA system, so we can announce things over speakers through the fire trucks. So there are ways that we can get that information out. But it's also an important point for neighbors to take care of themselves, or each other, not themselves. So check on your neighbors. You know, if you see an issue, see something, say something. You know, flag somebody down the streets. They're all going to be, you know, out and about. Yes, sir.
But just to piggyback on that question and the answer, is it battery-powered radio or solar-powered radio the most reliable way to be in touch with what's happening?
100%.
And then is there a dedicated station for St. Pete that we should know about, or frequency?
It's
probably in the guide that exists.
It's in the guide because there's a section on emergency radios. I don't have it in my head, but yes. And that brings me up to a different point, too. How many people have called the Mayor's Action Center, you know, the Mayor's hotline? How many people have used C-Click Fix? Right? Care about it? It's a great tool. So during a disaster, after a storm, that turns into damage reporting, issue reporting. What are you seeing? So you can take pictures of a tree in the road or a down power line, submit it with C-Click Fix, and it automatically gets forwarded to our debris teams so they can go clean it up. If you want to know the status of, you know, the different city buildings, or I don't have AC, I need to go pull off somewhere, and call the Mayor's Action Center, 893-7111, and they can give you that information. So having those numbers ahead of time, having those radio stations ahead of time, for sure. And if you don't have one, those little battery packs you get on Amazon, it's Prime Day, maybe they're on sale, they will charge your phone, you know, several times over. So keep those, keep them charged up.
If we are in downtown, if there was a 20-foot surge, water surge in downtown, it would be more than a few days. It would be a month or more before we could have power, right?
Oh, more power. I would assume power.
I don't know. It depends. I mean, Duke Energy after Irma has made a lot of improvements, but I'm not going to speak for them on how quick they're going to get it back up. But it's possible. I mean, Hurricane Michael, people left the area.
I can tell you salt water is worse than rainwater. So picture that on top of the surge. Now you got salt water, which corrodes.
Yeah, I mean, surge goes out fairly quickly. It comes in really quick, but it'll go out really quickly with the damage that it leaves. Because it pulls in debris, so think of the trees and the cars and everything else it pushes. When it goes back out, it's going to suck it right back out with it. There's lots of information on the website. So storm.pinellascounty.org is a way for you to look up your zone. That's your evacuation zone. It'll show you the closest hotels, shelters, all that fun stuff. There's also an app, the Pinellas Ready Pinellas app. If you download it, they will push notification to you, probably more than you want to know, but it's a great, great tool. It'll tell you that if you're under evacuation, if there's a thunderstorm warning, all of those things, and you can find different information there. Thank you so much.
All right, thank you, Amber, Jason.
A presentation recorded this week at the Cathedral Church of St. Peter, a meeting of the St. Petersburg Downtown Neighborhood Association, viewing and discussing the effects of a potential Category 5 hurricane on the Tampa Bay region. To view the video that the group watched this week, you can go online and visit tbrpc.org/phoenix. That's tbrpc.org/phoenix. Our thanks to Karen Carmichael and the St. Petersburg Downtown Neighborhood Association. To find out more about their group, visit stpetedna.org.